Welcome back to the Roundtable on a Friday morning. 9:13 is the time, and it's our Friday panel today. David Soares is here, Albany County District Attorney, Siena College Economic Professor Aaron Pasitti, Alan Chartok from WAMC, you may have heard of him, and we're still awaiting investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo. If you want to join us now, this will be a shortened panel. We may come back afterwards. We don't know how long these people are going to speak in Washington. If the last few days are any indication, they'll be speaking a long time. You can write us at panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'll get to as many letters as we can. But at 10, we will be going to the final markup, theoretically, of the impeachment articles, and then we will have live coverage from NPR. And now here's Rosemary. Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome, welcome, and welcome all. The to shift it up a little bit here before we start the impeachment talk, British Prime Minister Boris Johnson's Conservative Party has won a sweeping majority of seats in the House of Commons. The decisive outcome comes in an election devoted to Britain's departure from the European Union. The vote will make it possible to take the UK out of the EU next month. It makes Johnson the most electorally successful Conservative leader since Margaret Thatcher, the biggest loss for the Labours since, about 80 years or so. President Trump congratulated Johnson on Twitter and said that Britain and the US will now be free to strike a massive new trade deal after Brexit. I think this caught some pundits by surprise. Rosemary.
Well, I'm not surprised. Labour and Geoffrey Corbyn were extremely unpopular, but you actually have to hand it to Boris that he pulled this off. I thought he was a goner just a few months ago, but Brexit would go back to referendum, and now it looks like Britain will be leaving with a deal that is likely to shatter the UK. So the person happiest in the world, again, is Vladimir Putin.
Alan.
Well, yeah, it's a fascinating thing. I'm not so sure that I agree with Rosemary about who the big winner was. We know one thing. The big loser was Jeremy Corbyn, and people voted against him. You know, he had an extraordinarily left-wing approach to things. There are many of us who may subscribe to many of his ideas, but the British people weren't there. They just rejected it. So it was not as much as the Conservative winning, as much as the Labour people losing, don't you think?
Possibly. This could be a very interesting harbinger for the U.S. in 2020 about a left-leaning
right.
candidate with, you know, very progressive ideas that apparently didn't resonate with the British public, and they just go to the alternative,
which was
Johnson, despite the fact that, you know, Brexit is expected to do pretty substantial damage to the British economy in terms of the short-term losses, which are, you know, like 5% of GDP. There was that, I think they called it the Yellow Report, which was supposed to be confidential about the food and fuel shortages that would happen because, you know, you have to rewrite customs policies and documents. So all of these things that are coming into the island are going to get held up. People are going to be without all of this stuff. And that ignores even the long-term impacts of how this is going to affect trade with major EU partners like Germany and how that reverberates throughout the world economy. So this isn't just a British issue. This is a worldwide issue.
As a famous Englishman once said, we're going off the rails on a crazy train.
Oh,
that's what Brexit is.
Well done.
Yeah.
Sir Oswald Osborne.
Very good.
That's very nice.
Oh, look, for people who are sitting here listening and have very little interest in Brexit, what's happening in England is the same thing that's happening in the United States, which is the same thing that's happening all over the world. The economic hardship, the shift from, you know, your industrial base to a more technological based economy, all of these things that have left that manufacturing middle class, the coal miners, all of these issues that have really devastated organized labor, right? Who has managed to capture the ear of organized labor? the person who can bluster, who can talk about making America great again.
And destroy it most effectively.
And destroy it most effectively by pointing to something else. Well, the reason that we're in this state is because of the EU, right? And now they're about to commit economic suicide, right?
Just the pound is up today, though, right?
That's very temporary. Overall, Brexit for 2 years has been an utter...
Just a quick timeout.
I'm sensitive on this because Ritonin always, at the beginning of Brexit, two and a half something years ago, said, oh, this will be fine. It's all... The economic impact is just a lot of ballyhoo. It doesn't mean anything. I know. And I keep...
Why are you going to talk to my man, Rich? He's my boy.
I routinely send him notes saying, hey, how's that economy going in Britain? It has been a disaster politically,
that's harassment. It's aggravated harassment.
To Ray's point about the pound being up, people were cheering that the British economy grew at 0.5% last quarter.
Yeah.
Here's the
thing. Why would you cheer at a number that is so low and so below world averages?
Because they're English and they're always full of cheer.
But listen, not to cast aspersions.
We're not getting here.
Not to cast aspersions upon economists in general and pundits in the large scale. Listen. We watched the stock market the day after President Trump was inaugurated, and all the whispers were, oh, we're going to watch this market tank. And it tanked for a couple of minutes, and it's been up ever since. So what do we really know for sure?
Because what's happening in the U.S. is he's getting rid of regulations, which helps business. He has cut taxes enormously, unheard of amounts. So, of course, business is up. Of course, the economy has been helped by those. That's not what we're talking about with Brexit. Brexit, you're talking about, as Aaron said, delays in getting supplies in disrupture of all of the existing trade agreements. I also think, though, that this is really good news for Trump, who's having some big pluses in the trade in his trade war. He has some sort of a deal with China now, they're saying.
Who's saying?
Trump, the White House is saying, and okay. I think accurately.
Thank you. He's saying that there's a deal. I feel great now.
He's got the revised North American NAFTA agreement is coming out, and now this, which opens up a door for a U.S.-British trade agreement.
You know, Aaron brought up a point, and I want to ask Alan about this, how this is possibly a harbinger of things to come for President Trump. We followed Brexit, and the arc of Brexit and Johnson and Trump seem to be along parallel lines in time. Is this big win for the Conservatives in England, does it show any possible strength for what happens in 2020 here?
Well, I do think that right now Trump is in good shape. I mean, you know, let's face it, the market is doing well. You know, I can't stand the guy, but I do think one has to say that right now, if the election were tomorrow, Trump would be doing okay. But I think that the lesson from Great Britain is who you're putting up. If you're putting up a Marxist, and I'm not saying anybody who's running is a Marxist, but he is a Marxist, Corbyn was, yeah. And so he was rejected. I think there's a lesson here in terms of who the Democrats are going to pick.
Thank you, Alan.
I mean, I think so, that's what this is about.
Brilliant, because connecting those two issues is exactly what I was going to say about. Look, when you have aspirational goals for the country, I think we should always articulate them, right? I don't know that we need to articulate those aspirational goals in such aggressive terms. So when you're promising to eliminate people's health insurance that they perhaps enjoy and substitute that for something else that they don't know, those are the things that are going to, I think, create some of the same dynamics we've seen here in Great Britain, where, you know, you've had coal mining towns, these industrial towns that that used to be the blue wall or whatever color wall they would talk about for terms of Labour Party. This man went ahead and won those particular communities.
So what? So it's important to understand, at least from my perspective, why England wanted out of the EU.
And everyone should see Aaron's hands right now while he says this, because he looks like he's holding a biscuit and a sport a tea in the other hand.
Right.
I really love the visual here.
Earl Grey. Right here.
There you go.
So the opposition came from, you know, the free movement of labor across the EU, which meant low-wage, unskilled workers moving from second world countries, essentially Eastern Europe, into the more advanced Western European economies. That pushes down wages, creates more competition for jobs for, you know, British workers, German workers, Italian workers. So it's not unique to England that, you know, they're experiencing this influx of immigration, which is depressing wages. This is happening all over the EU. I think England just holds on to that, you know, the sun never sets on the British Empire idea. That's the same thing that's been happening in the U.S., but instead of immigrants, which, you know, admittedly are coming from Mexico and filling jobs that U.S. workers don't want because the wages are too low and the working conditions are too bad, it's the same thing as accepting immigrants to a country as it is exporting jobs for U.S. companies producing offshore.
But this is precisely
like the exporting jobs to China. So it's the same issue that's happening in both countries, is that with globalization and these supranational agreements that makes the free flow of labor more prevalent, it's going to depress wages. And that's happening worldwide, except in the lesser developed countries like China and Southeast Asia. And I'm going to say this, that has been the greatest anti-poverty policy in world history. That even though it's been bad for U.S. workers and British workers and workers in advanced economies, the number of people these trade agreements have lifted out of poverty in exceptionally poor third world countries has been astounding.
And there's no doubt about that. But I also think that what you've just pointed out also emphasizes the need to have a better foreign policy.
Exactly.
Right?
Right.
Because the one thing that has devastated Europe is the, I mean, we, what was it, 2, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, there were ships full of people fleeing, you know, various countries in the Middle East and ending up on the shore. We've seen, you know, children, you know, that wash up ashore. Well, that influx of people in those economies certainly, as you said, has helped to drive down wages. However, it stresses the point that countries like the United States, we have an obligation to assist other nations in stabilizing them, whether it's because of violence, whether it's poverty, because we want people to thrive in their own homes, in their own space. So you cannot have, right? I look at this administration, you cannot have a foreign policy that they have, which is to withdraw from everywhere, right? And then we're going to all of a sudden build walls to keep people out. It's just the most foolish thing.
So I want to go. So even though I said this was a great anti-poverty policy for people in third world countries, it's been devastating to workers in first world countries. That's easily fixed with policy. Right. You have you can provide guaranteed employment, essentially a second New Deal. You can provide job training to workers who have been displaced because of trade agreements. You can expand the social safety net. There's all types of policies that can soften the blow that, free trade agreements and, continental governments created. But we're not seeing that.
Yeah.
And Corbyn suggested that. The four-day work week is a great way of work sharing, right? So instead of working 5 days a week, creating overwork for the employed and, you know, unemployment and underwork for those who aren't so fortunate, you essentially share the work by reducing the work week.
Before we take a break here, I want to throw it over to Alan for a second. Alan, it would appear to me, and I'm not an expert on this stuff, that the huge win by the Conservatives yesterday in England certainly strengthens their negotiating stance when it comes to leaving Brexit.
Well, first of all, I'm always impressed by our panelists and what they have to say about this. But I think that the one thing, unless I haven't been listening carefully enough, that we should be talking about is that Great Britain was going to have some internal problems, including the Irish, the Scotch, and other
Scots.
People.
I said that at the beginning. The empire looks to be shattered.
William Wallace. That's right.
Yeah. So I thank you for that, Rosemary. Clearly, I should listen to you much more carefully.
Yes, I think we all should.
Yeah, yeah. Then here. Right. But I do think that this is huge, what the potential is here. Now, Ray, for the second part of your question, which I have now forgotten, would you give it to me again?
Well, it just seems to me that this strengthens the position of Great Britain in Brexit negotiations. Now, I think perhaps the EU thought, well, maybe this is never even going to happen. Right. Now they know there's a strong support base for this.
There's a maybe there. I'll go to Rosemary because there's a maybe. But on the other hand, I think that there's all kinds of indications that they basically understand this is going to happen.
Rosemary. I don't think there are new negotiations. The EU has said, good, we're looking forward to a vote on the deal we've given you. And Boris already gave it away. He gave it away. He went in there and did what Theresa May would not, which is why she's out, and he's in, apparently stronger than ever, which is saying, okay, well, do what you want with Ireland.
And yet the EU today saying we look forward to as close as possible a relationship with the UK. And that to me is a signal.
After they left.
Because the EU realizes there's a lot at stake. It's not just England. It's all of the trading partners within the EU that are going to be affected by this slowdown, which will happen if Brexit occurs. And then Germany goes into a recession. And then Japan goes into a recession. France. And then it's global contagion.
Let me ask you this. What would be the incentive for the EU to give anything?
None. Never has been.
Well,
and the reason is because if they give in, if they give an inch, what's the message that it's sending to all the other people who are deciding to remain? They can't get more favorable terms. Right. That's absurd.
Right.
Well,
get out and you'll be better off.
That's
not a good lesson.
That's terrible.
We have a minute here. Go ahead.
So, to David's point, it's to prevent a recession, a pretty substantial recession, from spreading throughout the EU. That's their incentive to offer England a decent deal in terms of what they want. The problem with that, and this is why I'm not a politician, is that it sets a precedent for other countries who think they got shafted. Mm-hmm. And it opens up the door for those countries figuring out a way to leave. The difference is, there are a lot of countries that benefit from EU integration. Germany, France, Italy, the big European economies. It's the smaller ones who won't benefit. But once you open that door, the floodgates are open, and at that point, it's anybody's guess what happens.
All right, we have to take a break here. It is a great roundtable panel. It's a little shorter today at 10 o'clock. We'll be breaking for NPR coverage of what I believe is the voting on the articles of impeachment, although the way things have been going, who knows? It could go until well into the evening, but I don't think so. We have Rosemary Romeo, Aaron Pacitti, David Soares, Alan Shartok. You can join us at panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We have a stack of letters. We'll try to get to a few after we take a break for news. Welcome back to the Roundtable. That's Jeff Muldaur. He'll be at Spencertown Academy Arts Center in Spencertown on the 14th. And that's, is that this weekend, the 14th? Yes. Oh, I'm losing. Yeah, that's tomorrow. Oh, for Pete's sake. Today is Friday the 13th. It was a bad day.
That's why I'm wearing all black.
The Knights Templar had a bad day all those centuries ago. And we'll see. Today, maybe Donald Trump will have a bad day. Impeachment articles expected to be voted on within the next half an hour. We have a brief roundtable panel until 10. David Soares, Aaron Pacitti, Rosemary Romeo, Alan Shartok here, Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. The email address is panel@wamc.org. This letter came in from John. It's an email. I'm sorry. This email came from John. We live in interesting times. The first half of the 20th century was defined by two great European wars, which engulfed the planet. Millions died. The EU has given us over 50 years of peace and plenty. That's now over. That may seem a little overdramatic, but set against an America intoxicated with loathing, I fear for what may come next. Can we put this into the we're doomed category, Rosemary? You want this?
It resonated with me. Okay. That's all I can say.
It's a very sober analysis.
So there's that, but there's also the Bretton Woods Agreement, which was the post-World War II financial agreement and trade agreements between the industrialized countries of let's regulate things, let's keep the peace economically, and you're starting to see that break down. as well.
This one's from Jim. Subject heading, the last Republican. John McCain may have been the last Republican in the Senate. The House Republicans are now all Trumpets, and if the Senate follows as expected, America's future will be a grim one. Trump and Trumpets are America's greatest enemy, and that is from Jim.
I agree with Jim.
Yep.
This one is subject heading, Boris. It's from Neil. Neil writes, please, panel, cheer me up. Boris Johnson won in a landslide. I feel like we're living in the 30s, watching the rising tide of fascism engulf the world, fueled by racism and hate. This will not end well. It's from Neil and Wendy.
My message of doom appears to be spreading.
It's important to understand that 30s reference, because the rise of Hitler and a lot of the fascist parties in Europe, people incorrectly attribute to the hyperinflation that resulted after World War One.
The Treaty of Versailles.
Yeah, when countries were demanded to pay reparations, so they printed money, and that led to hyperinflation. But the rise of those parties came from the stagnation of the 30s. Now, what's happening today, we're nowhere near the level of economic collapse and stagnation that we were in the 30s. But this period of prolonged slow economic growth, which economists call secular stagnation, low growth gives rise to populist parties. And historically, with the exception of FDR, they've all been far right parties.
And I'll tell you, the thing that troubles me the most is the fact that they're springing up everywhere.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The United States of America, Poland, right? Certainly in Italy, South America. Right? It's everywhere. It's everywhere.
This is from Andrew, subject heading, tragedy in the UK. Yes, Boris Johnson won against a very weak Labour Party leader. Please, please note that Scotland threw out the Conservatives and will now push for independence as well as rejoining the EU. 48 Scottish National Party MPs elected versus 6 Conservatives. Not all hope is lost. Populist politics will not last. And that's from Andrew.
How is that hopeful? It looks like Scotland will be leaving the UK. That's good?
And joining the
EU? Well, if you're Scottish, it might be.
Yeah, if you're Scottish, it is. And Ireland could do the same, too. So to me, that's part of the bad news. It's happy for people who want to see a disunited Europe.
Boris won, but at least your name is not Boris.
Alan, do you want to weigh in?
No, there's not much to say here. We don't really know. I agree. The Scotch may know what they're doing, and they may have every right to do that based on how they're being treated by England. So I'm sitting here ready to be surprised.
All right, fair enough. This is from Frank, Cult of Cowards. If the Republicans do not vote to impeach the president, would it be considered a dereliction of duty, breaking their oath of honor, and should be considered traitors? The GOP has become, sadly, a cult of cowards, and that is from Frank.
I don't think they've become a cult of cowards. They've always been a self-serving party. I mean, just like the just like the Democrats have. It's just been more explicit. But what you're seeing now is a shift from a self-serving party to a party that is more interested in their own private interests, which is re-election and getting bankrolled by the Koch brothers, than public service.
They are completely untethered to any of their principles. Principles that we've always attributed to the GOP.
And like we talked about last week, this began with Gingrich's contract with America.
True.
Let me ask I'll ask the whole panel here, and I realize our prosecutor might not have full details on the way things will work in the Senate, but I watched an interview with McConnell last night, and I was a little taken aback. They asked him, hey, are you going to call witnesses? And he said, well, listen, we have to talk to the White House counsels and lawyers on this to see what they want to do. I thought that I'm missing a point, but weren't they supposed to at least pretend? I mean, just like the House Democrats should pretend that it's by the book, shouldn't the Senate Republicans say, okay, we got to let this play out. This is not our call.
The one thing that I will say that I know is the silver lining here is the fact that at least they're not lying about, you know, what their true intentions are. They're just, it's out there. It's like getting it's like going backstage and seeing how everything is going to be choreographed before the curtains open, you know?
Well, so, you know, I have a little bit of a problem with that, David. McConnell, of course, has to protect his majority, right? We all know that. And if he can't, he's in trouble. And there is a big question in many people's minds whether people like Susan Collins and others, 5%, 4% change in the electorate because they're so disgusted with Trump, may really end up costing the Republicans the Senate.
But this
and
is,
I think McConnell knows that.
I disagree with you, Alan. It's not that...
What?
It's not that McConnell needs to protect his majority. He needs to protect the interests of the United States and credible elections for the next however long the U.S. lasts.
He's not shown a big interest in that. He has not at
So he is interested in preserving his majority, but that should not be the overarching goal.
I think Alan is talking about what it is, and you're talking about what it should be.
Correct.
Well, yes.
So you're right.
Which
Alan.
Is why he's wrong.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Alan.
Okay. There we go.
Now, so you know the Senate, which is you know the United States' version of the House of Lords. You know, they're the upper chamber, and they're supposed to be the adults in the room, and there's civility. There's, and you know what? To some extent, if you spend 5 minutes watching Louis Gohmert, you realize, oh my God. There's something going on here in the House. This is Collins.
The guy from Georgia. He's awful.
I have to tell you, I just have to say this. And I'm a New Englander, so, you know, I pretend that I'm wicked smart. I got a bad accent, right?
Irregardless of that.
As a guy from New England criticizing other people, that guy sounded like a Southern Terrier who had just bitten into a Butterfinger and was just out there barking. I wanted to wrap a newspaper and go out and just...
But he doesn't need your vote. He needs votes from Georgia, and I bet they were loving that show yesterday.
Even...
And Gantz, let's talk about him. Oh, my God.
I'm going to take this a step further. It's not that he needs votes from Georgia. He needs the money from the big Republican donors that
That's
will
true.
Allow him to... massage campaigns
he actually
to win
needs
in
both.
Georgia.
I want
to. Yes, right,
I know right now, you know, you wake up in the morning and you're listening to all of the pundits, you know, armchair quarterbacking the decisions that have been made by Nancy Pelosi and her sticking to two very clear issues and not adding anything else. And What I thought was hilarious was watching these discussions yesterday, which went quite honestly far too long. But having these clowns in the GOP talk about, well, where's the crimes? Where's the crimes? And you know what? It's the same cries that they had when they said, well, where's the votes to legitimize these proceedings? So if they would have added crimes, they would have said something else.
Right.
But here's the genius of Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi knows that these articles will have to be litigated in the Senate. And what did she do? She created these two articles that are so clear. It's
narrow.
Unimpeded and by any complexities. You have witnesses that testified. The narrative is simple to understand. And she's put that and bounced it to the Senate. McConnell is now in the position of literally having to create a process that will not allow for witnesses to testify, to continue to elaborate on
now that's
those
interesting
finer points.
Because the question was put to McConnell, will there be witnesses? Because at least what we hear is that the Trump camp wants there to be witnesses, the
usual
suspects.
That's a bunch of baloney, of course. In the same way that the president said during earlier proceedings that he wanted to be able to testify, he wanted to be able to say things, but he never meant it, and he doesn't mean it now.
I think he means that. I'll disagree with you on a minor point. I think he does want witnesses. He just wants witnesses that have no information about whether
or not
he's
Hunter Biden-related witnesses.
Hunter Biden.
And I think I fall between the two of you. I think McConnell does not want them, and he's trying to convince Trump that he doesn't want them. Trump does want the witnesses.
Nah.
And you saw Gantz floating it as a trial balloon yesterday.
Nah.
All of that testimony about bringing in the Bidens, this is real. If you can show that there was corruption, then he was legit.
I agree with you, Rosemary.
He was floating it.
And I have to say this, Alan, okay, that right now, the person who sits at the head of the table orchestrating all of these maneuvers is Donald Trump. It's not an attorney. It's not anyone who actually understands what's going on.
And he's so good at it.
And he's terrible. The only person... he's great at shooting himself in the foot. But he's terrible at any kind of strategy. Mitch McConnell is a strategist. And if Mitch McConnell is pushing back on witnesses, it's because Mitch McConnell knows that he's opening the door to a lot of problems that they will not be able to then protect president over.
Alan, well, I think this is where you have to come in and say, yeah, but he got elected. He's not that bad a strategist.
We have to take a quick break here. I was wondering, is it just possible that they just move to dismiss and never go to a trial?
Oh, that's not possible. I mean, I think you know, people aren't paying a lot of attention right now. And I will say this. I have to take a tip of the cap to the Republicans, because what they've managed to do is extend, conflate, and people are tuning out. I tuned out yesterday, right?
That's why they delayed the vote till today.
Yeah. So, but I will tell you, the one thing that will draw attention right back to the issue is if these impeachments are not litigated in the Senate.
Let's take a break. The email address here is panel@wamc.org. David Soares is here. Aaron Pasitti, Rosemary Romeo, and Alan Shartok. We're only going until 10. That's when the hearing begins, and we'll take a break and be right back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. 9:47. It's a Friday morning, Friday the 13th. Might be an interesting one. The panel is here. Aaron Pasitti, Rosemary Armeo, David Soares, Alan Shartok, and you. Jill wrote in on the subject of Robert's Rules of Order. Does Congress adhere to the parliamentary procedure in Robert's Rules of Order? If so, why couldn't one of the Democrats just call the question? That would have ended debate for each amendment. It may have required a vote to end each debate, which would have gone through if all the Democrats voted to end it. That debate hearing could have been cut to a fraction of the time and kept the Republicans from spinning the same lies over and over again.
And kept the Democrats from saying their thing. Come on.
Parliamentary rules are rabbit holes.
Absolutely.
There was a lot of repetition. If you know, we watched listened to the whole thing. Listened at work and then watched. Good Lord. I mean, everything that was said at 11 a.m. was being said at 9 p.m.
But that's the strategy. The strategy there was to continue repeating until people tune out.
But I didn't tune out.
I did. I turned on Gunsmoke, where the good guys always win.
Oh, you and Sherlock.
I'm with you, Alan.
Yes, I've made a final conquest here.
You have.
Rosemary is now watching Gunsmoke.
All right. This one came in from Kevin in Melrose. Isn't it dangerous for Trump to be tweeting about deals before they happen? Couldn't that force problems with insider trading?
Oh, I don't think it's any less dangerous than divulging like top military secrets in his tweets about certain locations where events took place.
Jeez.
But, you know, Trump is the John Coltrane of BS in terms of like throwing out things. It's like you think he's going one way and he says something and then he goes another way. And by the time the song's over, you have no idea where it started and a loose idea of where it ended.
You know,
it's just so bizarre, and he's so good at it. Like, say what you want about him as a president and a legislator. He is really good at just making people go from point A to point F in half a second.
I was just going to say, listening to him last week talk about toilets and flushing and his environmental stats, I wanted to do a safety check on Judith Inc. to make sure she was okay.
I know, that's true.
Did her head explode? Did she faint when she heard this man talk about flushing toilets?
Seth had the best comment on that. How much full of poop do you have to be to need to flush 10 times?
Right. This one came in from Marty. The subject heading is the left. Leader of America's left, Bernie Sanders, is no Jeremy Corbyn. He has over 4 million individual donations as of the end of November. Moderate centrism and corporate Democrats do not inspire young people who make up a huge part of the electorate. We need bold vision. Let's throw it over to our political observer on that.
Well, you know, I get into so much trouble here because, you know, I'm a big Bernie fan. I voted for Bernie in the primaries the last time. I believe that his message is solid and he's correct. I just don't think he can win. And therefore, you know, I just think it's important to follow the stars here, which point to moderation. Well, now, I think Bloomberg could win. I do. I think Bloomberg could win, but he'd have to get the nomination, and we don't know that he can do that.
The, prob-
Yes, please.
The problem with modern U.S. politics is the role of big money in politics.
True.
And somebody like Bloomberg, who comes in at the last minute bankrolling his own campaign, is part of the problem. I don't care if he's a moderate. I don't care what his policies are.
Well, I'd like to answer that since...
go ahead.
Since, I mean, it seems to me, personally, as a Bernie fan, as somebody who has been with him and before and all the rest of it and interviewed him 100 times on the radio, I just have to say this is a matter of beating Trump. That's what it's all about.
Well, look how he'll...
Now, wait. But if you can nominate somebody... Aaron Pacetti says, well, it's billionaires. We don't want billionaires. I want Trump out of there.
Yeah, I would take a billionaire over Trump in a heartbeat.
Oh, Trump is a billionaire.
To be proven.
Okay, all right, fair enough. But the point is that...
Are you kidding me? I'd take a Muppet.
Look how well...
I literally would take any Muppet.
Even Big Bird lost his voice.
Any Muppet.
Yeah.
Anyone.
Look how well the moderate Democrat did in 2016. I mean, I know it was close, but...
Okay.
That's my point.
Are we talking about
yes,
Hillary?
Yes, and by the way... And
she
by the way,
won
we don't,
the popular you, vote. She,
that's
she
right,
screwed
Rosemary.
Up on strategy. Let's go back to that.
And that's the point.
That's how well she did, Aaron.
Yeah, it's amazing how many people forget that. They said the Republicans are always saying, he won the election, he won the election, he got the most votes. He did not get the most votes. He didn't win the election.
He got the votes that counted.
Well, that's right.
And in states that count it.
Okay. All right. This one's from Patrick. British election. I'm in Ireland on vacation, and I have closely followed the British election. I agree with those on the panel who suggest that an unpopular leader can derail any party, no matter how good its program is. The Democrats should take note. Happy holidays from Patrick.
Enjoy your time, Patrick.
Hey. This is
I'm counting how many accents you're up to today,
yeah.
David.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
Four?
Can we get a Latvian?
I cannot do Latvian.
All right. This is from that's David Soares. He'll be here all week. And it's the end of the week. Janos writes, leave the English, Scottish, and Irish people alone. It's none of your business who they vote for. And if they want independence or not from the EU, it should not be U.S. policy to decide the destiny of other sovereign countries. You do not live there. Don't try and think on their behalf. And that's from Janos in Great Barrington.
Well, we live in a globalized economy, so...
Is she from the Ukraine?
We'll never talk about Brexit again. It's off limit.
I mean, the thing is, it's big news, right?
Stay away from
leading all the papers.
Oh, come on.
Stay away from other people's
elections. We're talking about the world's major industrialized trading partners. Of course, what happens in England is going to affect Germany, which is going to affect the U.S., which is going to affect Japan, which is going to affect China.
Can you let that person know that we are now in a global economy?
Yeah. Well,
thank you.
For now.
I don't think we agreed.
Not a good letter.
No.
All right. Well, you know, I'm just reading them. Don't yell at me.
It
I'm just.
Why
discussion. Not?
I'm the fill-in host. Give me a break here. This is from a Jim in Binghamton. Brexit. I serve as a trustee on a relatively large foundation. Recently, we met with our investment advisors and asked about the potential impact of Brexit on our investments. Without exception, each advisor just shrugged their shoulders. Basically, they couldn't care less about it and thinks this will have an insignificant impact, if any, on the world markets. They are much more concerned about U.S. trade wars, Trump's trade wars. That's where the real action is, and that's from Jim in Binghamton.
Yeah, Jim, I think you're right.
All right, last letter here. This one is...
People in Binghamton are wicked smart.
You know what?
And that's more of a...
Our signal gets there, so apologize right now. They are wicked smart.
They are wicked smart. That was a compliment.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
that's how we compliment one another in where I'm from.
You know what? You got a lot of... You're like John Biner today. You got a lot of accents. You can do imitations. You do The Godfather.
I have to tell you that when you sent that note and you said, we're talking about Brexit... I just love the English. I love Benny Hill, and it tapped into my inner Benny Hill.
He actually asked me if we could get Benny Hill bumper music when we did the Brexit.
I'm suing for sexual harassment if you do.
I didn't even ask the engineer, even though I'm sure he would have gone along with it.
Benny Hill has a Me Too problem.
He's dead. Luke in Western Massachusetts. House decorum. Can you clarify the House decorum rules for me? Why doesn't Collins' claims that Nadler's oversight recess was purely for TV cameras count as impugning his motives? Alan.
Well, I don't know. I want to pass to somebody who knows more than I do.
Is there anyone in the world?
Yes, almost everybody.
It's impossible, Alan.
The lawyer in the room, maybe.
It's impossible. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we don't really know about the House decorum rules and why Collins claims.
Oh, I see the point of the question. Yeah. No, the rules are whatever they make them. And as you saw with Mr. Schiff and with Nadler, they bang the gavel and they say, you're out of order.
Here's the issue I wanted.
I think truth is a defense. And he did hold it off so that the vote was in prime time today or in the middle of the day, not in the middle of the night.
So what's wrong with that?
He would have lost nothing. I think Collins' charge about him is right, though.
I just want to take on an
Alan. Nah, it is not right.
I was here months and months ago when we started to see the judiciary hearings. And my observation at the time was that Nadler was just doing such a terrible job. And Alan jumped all over me and said, I think Nadler's doing a great job.
I did.
Compare Nadler's hearings to Schiff's hearings.
Oh, yeah.
Right? God, here we go. Schiff fan club. You can't. It's a completely different committee.
Well, let him finish.
It's not about, the fact that it's a different committee. It's about the fact that this guy's quick with the gavel. He's quick to turn the nonsensical and eliminate that.
You're talking about Schiff now.
Schiff. I was sitting here watching a circus. And now I'll tell you this. It is frustrating for litigants, right? To be in a court where the judge is kind of like not in control of the court.
And why do you think Pelosi has been so insistent on Schiff getting the credit and yesterday Richie Neal getting the credit and basically quieting the other guy down, Nadler down? I think it's quite clear she doesn't have a lot of faith in him.
Yeah. Does she have a lot of faith, Alan, in the process? She seems to have kept it at arm's length.
I'm sorry. My mother would say, "I'm sure. I'm sorry. I'm not sure what you're getting at."
In other words, the impeachment process. She has been not front and center most of the time.
No, she's been front and center. She's been running the whole thing, Ray.
But not publicly. This is my point.
I think pretty publicly. The fact that she picked Schiff, the fact that she, you know, she downplays Nadler, the fact that, she brings the great Richie Neal in on it. It seems to me in some ways she knows who her prime players are, and she's running the whole thing.
All right, you have 15 seconds, Rosemary.
I think that's complete speculation. She's put the emphasis on committees rather than on her because she is in complete charge. And if you want to talk about someone getting dissed, it's Maxine Walters in Oversight, which was also supposed to be a committee involved in this. And you've not seen them at all except when she stands up on the podium behind Nancy. I think Richie Neal has her confidence, as does Adam.
All right, we have to leave it there. If you are just tuning in, we're going to cut the panel early here, and we'll go to the House Judiciary Committee. They are expected to approve two articles of impeachment against President Trump. We will have live coverage for you. Thanks to David Soares, Rosemary Armeo, Aaron Pasitti, and Alan Shartok. Thank you for joining us. If, in fact, this goes very quickly, not very likely, we'll come back and we'll talk some more. And there you heard it. The House Judiciary Committee has approved the first of two articles of impeachment. Actually, both of them here. The president, it charges President Trump with abuse of power. The panel is now sending that for review for a couple of days and then presumably goes right to the Senate. We will be back with a roundtable panel momentarily.
Support for WAMC comes from Hudson Headwaters Health Network, providing comprehensive primary care to more than 5,600 square miles of the Adirondack, North Country, and Glens Falls regions, hhhn.org. Third Eye Associates Limited, life planning, transition planning, and wealth management strategies, registered investment advisors with offices in New York City, Washington, D.C., and the Hudson Valley, thirdeyeassociates.com. Rockefeller College at UAlbany, offering masters in international affairs while studying from anywhere with synchronous distance learning. Learn more at an upcoming info session on December 17th, albany.edu/Rockefeller. And Harney & Sons Fine Teas, holiday gifts of loose teas to sachets and cookies, treats, teapots, teaware, and other gift ideas in Millerton and Soho and online. Harney.com.
Welcome back to the roundtable. 12 minutes after 10 o'clock. After marathon hearings, this one was mercifully brief. The House Judiciary Committee has approved both articles of impeachment against President Trump. And we have our roundtable panel here. We have Aaron Pasitti, Rosemary Armeo, David Soares, and Alan Shartok. Alan?
Yes,
you,
sir.
You first, sir.
What would you like to know? Yes, well, you know, they were under tremendous attack from the Republicans for acting out of order and trying to show off by having this in the daylight, which I'm always for. I mean, I'm so used to having been around for so long to watching our New York State Legislature vote on stuff in the middle of the night that even they have decided not to do that anymore. And that says, that tells you a lot. The Democrats wanted to do it. They wanted to do it efficiently, and they wanted to do it in daylight, and that was a good thing.
Rosemary.
Well, no surprises. I'm glad they did it during the daytime. I've been long talking about how Democrats have to have better messaging and theatrics, and doing this in the middle of the night would have been crazy. The two articles are exactly as written, despite 14 hours of debate in which the Republicans tried to do everything from completely eliminate the first article to change the wording. And I love this one, that take out all reference to Joe Biden and just put in Burisma, as if it were legitimate to be investigating a gas company that has allegations of corruption, not the president's personal political rival. So all of that was grandstanding. It's lots of repetition, and now goes to a vote in the House. And I think that one, there's a little less predictability on who will be voting yes and who will be voting no.
That's interesting. How many Democrats do you think will be jumping ship in the full House, Alan?
It's not that they're jumping ship, Ray. It's that they'll be allowed to jump ship.
All right. Either way, you're jumping.
The whole point here is to preserve the majority. They have won a blue majority in the House, and they want to keep it. So if there are people like from Utica or other places who are really winning by 8 votes or whatever it is now, they'll let them off the hook. It isn't their decision, really. I guess ultimately it is. But I don't think that's what this is all about. I think this is about party politics. And, some people will be allowed to jump.
I was a lad fairly young when the impeachment thing went down for Nixon. If and when it comes to, it will come to a full vote in the House, will every House member have a chance to talk? Because it may take 3 weeks.
Well, what will happen is there will be some agreement as to whether or not people will be allowed to show off, or whether they'll be allowed to be defensive. But it won't take 3 weeks. It may take a day, somebody will say, I rise to discuss my vote, and they're going to be allowed to do that. Mm. But believe me, you've got a tough leader in Nancy Pelosi, and she's not going to allow much BS.
Well, if you're just tuning in, the House Judiciary Committee has approved 2 articles of impeachment against President Trump. Happened about 5 minutes ago. The charges now go to the full House for an expected vote. That's next week. At least right now, that's what we're hearing. The abuse of power charge stems from Trump's July phone call with Ukraine president, pressuring him to announce an investigation of Democrats as he was withholding U.S. aid. The obstruction charge involves Trump's blocking of House efforts to investigate his actions. Trump has denied wrongdoing, may or may not be witnesses called in the Senate. I guess they could dismiss it before there's a trial. David, you don't believe that will happen?
I don't believe that will happen because people will view the dismissal as a cover-up, and oftentimes the reaction to cover-ups are far worse than the reaction to the underlying crimes. You know, the one thing, again, in terms of strategy here, I do have to take your tip of the cap to Nancy Pelosi, a brilliant strategist here, in making sure that we have 2 articles of impeachment that are rather clear, unencumbered by complexities and depriving the defense of a lot of areas to attack. Because surely if they had included a lot of the Mueller report issues in these articles of impeachment, it would have just, you know, opened up the floodgates for attack and other collateral issues. So I do want to, you know, credit her for this process, making sure that what you're delivering to a biased panel, which is the Senate, what you're delivering is a very clear document upon which these individuals will have to make choices. And if they go ahead and just make, you know, if they just go ahead and ignore all the facts, boy, I do believe that the Democrats would have a number of wonderful issues to discuss on the campaign
trail. I really
trail.
Believe it's, David, I agree with you, and I believe that it's, it may be the thing that will, the strategy will result in a Democratic Senate.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what toll this takes on Trump's psyche, like the fact that he was the second president to be impeached. Nixon resigned before he was impeached, correct?
Correct.
Yes.
The third.
So, correct. So, yeah, I'm sorry. He'll be the third. You know, watching this from a entertainment perspective, this is going to be kind of enjoyable to see.
Yeah, he was
the
certainly...
mental disintegration of Trump. Yeah. being part of this elite company of impeached presidents, from a citizen of the United States, this is awful.
Well, this is, I have to, there's only one true distinction here, and that is this will be the only president heading into re-election,
right,
and you know, having been impeached. And we'll see what impact that plays.
Do you think it'll change three Republican votes? I don't. In other words, I think the lines are drawn. The purples are what is at stake here.
And they're not liking what they're seeing thus far, as far
what
as
do you mean, Ray?
In other words, the polling that I have seen shows that those purple states are less liking the whole impeachment process than perhaps Democrats would expect.
So that means they're still supporting Trump.
Don't know what that means. I'm just saying it doesn't seem like that meter is moving in the direction that the House Dems or the Senate Dems would believe should be the case.
I don't think that the needle is moving in either direction, and it hasn't moved in either direction beyond a margin of error. I mean, one month it's 51%, another month it's 50%. So it's not really moving to the point where you can really assess and derive any information from, but I do think that, you know, the battle here and the people to watch are going to be the eyes, and you know, it all depends on what the eyes are experiencing. And I also want to, you know, make the point that there are at least a half a dozen issues that are still in the air that could impact all of this, right? I mean, we have
such as
there was an application in the Southern District to revoke bail on Rudy's, you know, co-conspirators. Basically, they found money that had been hidden that had not been previously disclosed, and so they certainly have the grounds to move forward to tighten the news or the screws on Parnas,
Lev.
Right?
Yeah.
And Parnas has been willing to sing, I think, without pressure. Yeah. So I have no idea what he's going to be saying, what kind of information he's going to be providing. I do think that a great tell was Adam Schiff, who had speculated as to, you know, new information that would be provided to the Senate, or new information could arise for the Senate to consider.
I don't want to underplay what Aaron said, to go back to that for just a minute. Trump is not handling this well. He does not like criticism, we know. He set a record for number of tweets yesterday, and he's going off in every direction, including a really controversial tweet against Greta Thunberg, the young Swedish activist for climate, who was named Time Person of the Year.
And so, David, I want to ask you a question. Well, I wanted to ask you a question, David, and that is, if in fact there was a they found Trump committing a murder on Fifth Avenue, which is something he said he could do, right?
Yep.
Shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue. Would there be a change in the Republican voters in the Senate?
Well, see, now here's what's interesting, because in terms of what the various bodies have had to consider in drawing up the articles of impeachment, I think that if you're a Republican in the Senate, you would want to stay within the four corners of the documents that have been submitted and not look beyond anything outside of that record. However, this is not a legal trial where you'd be, prohibited from considering all of those things. Look, this is a show trial. I mean, you're going to have these jurors who are going to be sitting there and paying attention. Should other acts other crimes or other acts, you know, manifest themselves during this period of time, these senators could not possibly ignore them, you know? So you just have to stay tuned and see exactly how all of these issues coalesce and how they're going to impact this trial.
I agree with you.
The email address here is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We broke for about 10 minutes. The House Judiciary Committee approved two articles of impeachment. Now we're back. We have Rosemary Romeo, Alan Shartok, Aaron Pasitti, and David Soares with us. New York Times tweeting out some breaking news in the last minute. China says it has agreed to an initial trade deal with the U.S. that would roll back some tariffs, a major de-escalation in the trade war, and that is according to the New York Times. Aaron, this is right in your wheelhouse.
I know. Bring it on. You know, it's okay. So before I get into that, it's interesting that the past week has been a blizzard of legislation that we haven't seen since Trump's been elected. There's been the paternal leave. There's been the China talks. There's been the budget agreement. There's the Space Force. There's the new NAFTA. I don't know if Trump's getting good advice about, you know, maybe do something productive to distract from the impeachment hearings.
He can't get out.
We've been here before with the China talks. You know, it's okay. Well, we're putting something on the table, and it's not that they're eliminating the tariffs. It's that they are, they're going to forego increases in future tariffs and maybe roll back some existing ones. Something China has not even acknowledged, let alone agreed to. It takes two sides for this.
Well, according to the New York Times, okay. China has agreed.
Okay, so now they have. There's so much more at stake. So this is a minor de-escalation of the trade war, and it's been called Phase One. Is this going to lead to Phase Two? No, because it doesn't address the substantive issues that really underlying this, which is the state subsidies of certain favored enterprises,
intellectual property.
The list goes on and on and on. This is we want China to buy more U.S. $50 billion worth of U.S. farm goods. I mean, this is weak tea in terms.
I don't know.
Go ahead, Alan.
I don't know. Anytime that Trump wants to play that China card, the market is going to go up, and he's always known that.
Sure.
And he's always known that, and it'll work for him. You're right, Aaron. There are many things that are part of this agreement that haven't been agreed to yet, or that should be part of this agreement that haven't been agreed to. But frankly, he's in the driver's seat when it comes to this China policy thing, and he knows how to play it, and he's playing it well.
Yeah, and the best case scenario is we go back to square zero, which is almost no agreement on the major substantive issues. It's just, the tariffs are no longer in place, or the tariffs are not going to go up beyond what we've already agreed to.
With this particular president, it's always motive. You always have to consider the motive. And when you say weak tea, it is weak tea. However, that tea is being directed towards the farmers that he knows that the Chinese intentionally targeted, right, in hopes that he would lose their support. And so I wouldn't expect a comprehensive trade agreement with China, but I would expect a trade agreement with China that is designed specifically to mollify the farmers that he's lost.
I just want to dispel the idea that Alan made that this was being well handled by Trump and it was a good thing. This is terrible strategy to go after China in this way. He eliminates a trade agreement that would have really been a threat, I think, eventually to China, and has not replaced it with anything except a trade war that has cost Americans more in subsidies than we've paid for in the trade deficit with China.
You know,
Rosemary, how is this a win?
Rosemary, I just thought you could have said the same thing without having to disagree with Alan. I thought the preamble was
unnecessary.
That's
the fun part.
I agree.
Come
with
on,
that.
David. That's the fun part. He's the one who said, China, there's no trade.
To be clear, we don't have the details of this yet. So we don't know what was given and what was taken.
There's just the speculation about what the U.S. Trade Representative and the Treasury Secretary and an anonymous source from these negotiations reported. So this is all still very uncertain about how it will play out. It's an outline of how things might play out. And the economist from J.P. Morgan, who, you know, you're talking high finance, said nothing major is going to come from this aside from the elimination of past disruptions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this is not a step forward. This is just fewer steps backward.
Nobody puts words in my mouth better than Rosemary. I am not a Trump fan. I just believe that every time he says, and he gets the Chinese to go along with it, that we're not going to go to increased tariffs and the rest of it, that his numbers go up and the stock market goes up. I don't like it.
Yeah, that's true in the short term. But what matters going into 2020 is how uncertainty affects business investment, how business investment affects job creation, how job creation affects wage growth, and how wage growth affects consumption. And consumption has been what's propping the U.S. economy up since 2017, 2018.
And yet, as a brilliant economist that you are, you're also a bit of a foo-foo.
Wow, what the heck does that mean?
Well, because what it means is he's always trying to tell us what the downsides are, what could happen. I'm a political scientist who just looks at the facts, and the facts are that every time he does this, he benefits from it, and he will continue to benefit from
How has he benefited from this?
Because his market is going to go up, because his numbers are going to go up, and because, by
You're
the
speculating.
Way—
You're speculating.
Can I just— can oh, I, can
I'm
I just,
speculating.
All right, hang on. David Soares, you have the floor.
So Aaron started his remarks by citing to at least a half a dozen achievements from the course of over the course of the last 2 weeks that we've just not heard about, right? And this would all of these achievements would otherwise be very positive things, right? That you or anyone who has any common sense would really be trying to amplify.
Space police.
We have
force.
A president.
Not quite sure. That's...
We have a president that steps on his own good press, right? Because instead of talking about the economy and instead of talking about these achievements, he's going to pick on a 16-year-old girl who just became Person of the Year from Time Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
I say all of this to say that it doesn't matter if this particular bit of news from the New York Times about this China deal gives him a temporary bump. I'm telling you that he is going to step on it and kill himself.
All right, we have to take a break.
David, but he got to be president somehow.
David Soares is here. Aaron Pasitti is here. Rosemary Armeo and Alan Shartok. You, of course, can join the fun by emailing us at panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org. Lots to talk about today. We'll get to many more of your emails coming up. We have bonus time just ahead after we break for news from it's the BBC, right? Yeah. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. We're hearing Jeff Muldaur, who will be at Spencertown Academy Arts Center tomorrow. That is the 14th of December already. I got to get my Christmas shopping going.
Oh my goodness, it's already the
13th today. SpencertownAcademy.org is the web address if you want to find out more about that show. We are in the middle of a roundtable panel. We broke for about 10 minutes. The House Judiciary Committee approved two articles of impeachment. It'll now go for a full vote in the House next week. And, of course, you'll hear it here in glorious detail on WAMC. It's the roundtable panel. David Soares, Aaron Pasitti, Rosemary Armeo, Alan Shartok, and you. panel@wamc.org is the email address. This one came in from Jamie. Grounds for impeachment. The Democrats may be brilliant in keeping the articles of impeachment as broad as they have. It allows them to go into many specifics that many thought should be separate grounds in support of the impeachment. We have no idea what evidence that will be presented in support of the underlying crimes. Fasten your seatbelts. It's going to be a bumpy ride. Now, David Soares said this was very narrow, not broad.
It isn't broad. It's very narrow. They could have complicated this process by deciding to revisit the Mueller report and throw all of those. I mean, they're solid counts, in terms of his obstructive behavior. But you're going to be getting into issues that I think they wanted to steer clear of, especially given the reaction to the first Mueller report.
This one is from James. With only hearsay behind the articles, the Chief Justice should dismiss the charges for lack of evidence.
Oh, my goodness.
This is another dude, how many convictions can a person obtain, you know, using hearsay evidence? It's not just hearsay evidence. You have direct evidence. What are you watching? And here's the thing that, you know, sorry if I sound a little angry here.
Yeah,
but
you seem like you need anger management.
You know, if you're going to engage in discussion or healthy debate, take the minute and read something and not just parrot talking points that you watch on a particular network.
What network do you think he was watching?
All right,
moving on. MTV.
You heard it on CNN too, because every Republican congressman said that exact thing. There's no crime at all. Eric Swalwell was the Democrat responded saying no crime, just with the incredulity.
This is what drives my blood. My wife, you know, I sit and I watch Channel.
Whatever.
Watch Meet the Press.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Channel
10 a.m. on Sundays.
No, 13.
And I just lose it because Chuck Todd allows these people to just
talk on and
the
on.
Talking points. Talk. It's like, no, you know that that's not true. Confront them on that issue.
Yeah.
And you just, this is part of the problem.
I don't like him. I don't think he's effective.
But one point that our writer said was, the Chief Justice should dismiss the charges. Is that his decision to make, or is that the Senate?
The Senate is developing the rules of evidence as we speak. And so this isn't going to be a judge who is going to be abiding by the federal rules of civil procedure or criminal procedure. It's going to be the rules that are developed by the Senate that will be applied in this instance.
Which means the Republicans.
This one is from Russell. I think the House Democrats missed opportunities to best present the findings and evidence supporting the two articles. First, TV is a visual medium, and they wasted this. They should have presented the evidence like a DA or U.S. attorney would do in announcing a mob case. Photos of the players, what they said, connecting the dots, a visual timeline. If they did that, I missed it. They also failed to consistently use the same concise terms. The Republicans have their alliterative repeated phrases. Hopefully they'll learn for the Senate. That's the first point from Russell. Second point is, probably doesn't matter, he says, the reality of choose-your-own news options means that there's no Cronkite, Huntley, Brinkley, universally trusted figures to present the news and make sense of it. This fractured sourcing means that no one will be moved and few are paying close attention. I think the House had to take the step. Now the question is, who will benefit politically?
We may not have Cronkite, but we have Shot Talk.
We do got Shot Talk.
We got Shot Talk.
And you got Rachel. I mean? And you got Rachel Maddow. You know what I mean? So there are individual people who will be looked on years from now as being the voices of reason, in the same way Huntley and Brinkley and Cronkite were before.
I mean, with the rise of so many different media outlets, it leads to confirmation bias. People just seek out a source that confirms what they already believe.
But it's not as black and white as that, as Cronkite, Huntley, Brinkley were universally trusted. I was flipping around the old people's channels because I watch a lot of that, and All in the Family was on, which I haven't seen in 40 whatever years. And
oh, Jesus.
Right. Archie is sitting down at the table saying, turns the TV on, or sitting down into his chair, I got to watch that Pinko Cronkite right now.
Yeah.
It's like, even then, there was that attitude.
But you're talking about
Archie Bunker.
Yeah, there
were probably some Marxists that said, let's look at this fascist Cronkite, you know? So.
This one came in from Joel. Resignation? He'll never resign. He regards that as losing. He will deny and defy to the end and turn up his rhetoric to incite his base to violence. He has absolutely no conscience, no concern for anyone but himself and his ability to control others. He is both sociopath and psychopath.
Yes, but what would you have to do in order to get him to resign? In other words, what would the circumstances be? Certainly not with a Senate that's going to vote in his favor, right?
What got Nixon? It was the bigwigs from the Senate saying, "Hey, look, we can't back you on this," right?
And that was because they were, as my mom would have said, the best of the Republican sort, and they had consciences, I think, that these people do not have. I think it would take the tapes. That's what it would take, and you don't have the tapes. You have a conversation which was put on the table by the president himself, and God knows what was left out of that. So it's not the same thing.
You do have the tapes. The tapes just happen to be rushed over to a very classified portfolio that can no longer be obtained, which is precisely the points that I am hoping that the Democrats, as they're presenting these cases, continue to harp on. The fact that if this man had any exculpatory evidence at all, he would have presented it, but he has none. Mm-hmm.
Yesterday afternoon, and I don't remember the Republican on the House who said this. I was driving home, so it was about maybe 4 o'clock. And he said, you know, as an aside, 23 people were listening on this call. We have to do something about this. That's a lot of people listening on a call. I thought that was a strange sort of side note to the whole thing.
Well, you know, like I said, it's been an abandonment of principles. But first of all, I mean, the policies that have been put in place in terms of how we engage, you know, foreign nations, be it through phone call, it is a strict and a very disciplined process so that we always understand that, because we need continuity. Right. You don't want misunderstandings leading to, you know, wars or anything. That's why we've put these processes in place. But for this particular person, who I guess needs to sit at a high table with a bib, you know, you want to alter, you know, the process so it suits him. And then you're talking about a guy that you can't trust on the phone. You wouldn't trust him using an Uber app, you know, to get a ride.
Anybody want to follow up on that? All right, hearing nothing, Vance writes, at peace. I agree that we can expect an acquittal in the Senate, but I'm at peace with the House Dems' decisions. Finally, things make sense. This president is a criminal, and at least we will have the truth for history. At least we will have that, and that is from Vance in where?
It depends.
On what?
Well, it depends on what the outcome of all of this is. If America goes from being a Republican democracy into a fascist dictatorship-like state, which I believe is what this guy wants. It is.
It's all right. No one heard it. Go on.
Murray, cut it out. So, if he gets what he wants, the very nature of this country could change and change forever. Then I don't know what history is going to say, or whether we'll be allowed to have a history.
You know, the House vote will be a historical marker. No matter what happens in the Senate.
Our country has, in fact, changed forever.
It always changes. Everything changes. Nothing stays the same.
Listen, I'm not talking about the kind of change that our country has, in fact, changed forever. We have a concentration camp with young kids, you know, who happen to be our neighbors to the south. We've taken the Statue of Liberty and basically just put a big blanket over her.
When did that? Did it change during FDR when the Japanese had to go to camps, or is this new? I mean,
see the fact that you could mention FDR suggests to me that something like this has happened before that we should have learned from, but here we are right now engaged in the very same thing. The norms that we've had in this country for over 75 years in our relationships with you know, our allies, all of it threatened.
My point is that was not really a change. That has been done. Well, and it was done in the Obama administration and prior administrations.
It was done in the time of World War. This is not World War.
Yes, that's right. And my point is, you ain't seen nothing yet if he gets his way.
Yeah. This one came in from Jason. Democrats need to brace themselves to the fact that the House impeachment vote will be the high point for us. And after that, it's going to be an all-Republican show. We'd better get ready for the post-impeachment hangover and dig in even deeper to win everything we can in 2020. That's from Jason.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
This one's from Mark. Is Trump smart enough to save China trade breakthrough until October? Think of the positive press.
Yeah, but he needs to get China to agree to it. I mean, this is not a one-sided operation.
Well, smart is one thing. Cunning is another. I certainly think he's cunning enough to wait and to give away the store. We saw it with Ukraine. And now we're going to see it again with China. If he needs to, in order to get a win in the election, he needs to give more away to China. He'll do it.
Let's take.
Is that a sign of defeat, though? Giving more away to China and just getting rid of the tariffs and saying
right,
okay,
we don't
you're
know what
buy...
he gave yet, though. So let's not make that leap, right?
But to Alan's point, and that was, you know, how's he going to handle
China? Not yours,
China?
Right?
Just if Trump, if they do reach an agreement, I don't think it's going to be anything substantive. He can't point to victory.
All my point was, Alan, he may have well given away the store, but we don't know until we see what he gave away. That's all. That's
and he will do anything he can in order to achieve re-election.
All right. Let's take a break here. The email address is panel@wamc.org. David Soares is here. Aaron Pasitti, Rosemary Armeo, Alan Shartok. We'll be right back. That's Jeff Moldauer. He'll be at Spencertown Academy Arts Center in Spencertown tomorrow. And that's our bumper music today here on the Roundtable. 10:46 is the time. It's a Friday. Nice panel today. Rosemary Armeo, Aaron Pasitti, Alan Shartok, David Soares, and of course you at panel@wamc.org. Tentative deal. You are talking about all the things that have gotten done, Aaron and David. Senior lawmakers have announced a tentative agreement on almost $1.4 trillion in government-wide spending. The deal would stave off a federal shutdown next weekend, split the differences on a number of contentious issues. Word of the deal comes from the chairwoman of the House Appropriations Committee and other top members of Congress. The agreement would award President Trump with additional money for the U.S.-Mexico border wall, while giving the Democrats, who control the House, a number of their priorities. Votes in the House and Senate expected next week before a spending bill expires next Friday at midnight.
Well, I want to go to Aaron. Aaron, aren't these the same Republicans who have been railing for years about the debt being too high?
Yep. Yeah, that was going to be my first point, is that
I'm glad I spoke first then.
If you go back to, 2011, when Boehner was the Speaker of the House, the obstructionism that congressional Republicans had about just preventing any spending bill from getting through. Now that there's a Republican in office, all of a sudden we don't care about the deficit. We don't care about, tax cuts. We don't care about interest on the national debt. So, yeah, it's not hypocrisy. It's party politics. So the interesting thing with these spending bills and government shutdowns is it doesn't authorize new spending. It permits spending that has been agreed to, subject to some compromise, from happening. Right? This is not we're going to go forward with these policies that weren't on the table before. All it does is authorize the government to make good on its promises that it agreed to in the past, subject to some limited compromise. And let's not forget that Trump rejected the 2019 spending deal and shut down the government for 35 days because he didn't get his full funding for the wall. And that's not going to happen this time. So it's unclear how Trump will respond to a very similar arrangement.
I think David and Rosemary are texting each other from across the table.
Do you want me to keep going? So from an economic perspective, the risk of a government shutdown is that the government doesn't make payments to Social Security recipients, interest paid to bondholders, and all of these other programs, which could lead to some economic damage, which could affect the stock market and the overall performance of the U.S. macro economy. But this is an agreement in principle as of right now, and it'll be interesting to see where these compromises and concessions are made and which ones are not, and whether or not Trump actually agrees to it.
Yeah, I mean, pulling away a bit from the actual substance of this agreement, I found it interesting that neither party wanted this fight.
No.
We just have to get this done. Let's get it done. Usually someone would be holding something up, and they would be playing the politics of this particular issue, as they have in the last, I think, four or five different cycles.
Who had the most to lose?
I just think that they both have a lot. They've both had a lot to lose. I would say, considering the beating that the Republicans took the last time when this president in a very public meeting said, all right, I will take the hit, I think that still resonates with them. They don't want to revisit this issue.
And to say nothing of Newt Gingrich
or any of the other Republican guys before. I think the Republicans had the most to lose here.
This one is from Evelyn. Impeachment strategy and the willingness to change. At the outset, I agreed on the keep it simple, stupid strategy, hoping the Congress and the public would find the integrity in the face of such a clear-cut argument. However, we've since learned this is not the case, so I now say throw the bloody book at him. At the very least, it'll expose all his criminal and non-constitutional acts for all and for posterity. And that is from Evelyn.
Evelyn's throwing the bloody book at,
yeah, at us. Yeah,
throw the bloody book. If you are related to Evelyn, please make sure you get there on time if she wants you
so,
on time.
I've got a question for David, and this is something that's been on my mind for a while. So all of these issues that come up during the impeachment hearings, once Trump's out of office, can they be prosecuted?
Oh, yes.
Okay, so it's not something that is completely isolated and walled off with these hearings and, you know, once the, you know, Senate rejects them.
There is a statute of limitations, and that is exactly what Mr. Trump is looking at right now. Yeah, because, sure, as I said before, this isn't just about an election for him to serve another, to serve his country another 4 years. This is about preserving his liberty. There, I mean, there's a man who is currently sitting in prison right now who paid a porn star money so that she would not, you know, report their affair while he was running for office. That man is sitting in prison right now. So he's got that issue, right? He's got that issue that is perhaps the softball.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's not a...
Yeah. So when this man, if he wins another term, it means that he can start to look at his, you know, previous sins and start ticking them off because he'll have 4 more years that he can't be touched.
But the statute of limitations would be more than 4 years, right?
Well, what I'm saying is that in some instances it's 5 years, depending on whether it's a felony or misdemeanor. But if you're in office and you have 4 and you've committed a crime during that 4, trust me, your second 4 is the one you really want to focus on.
Okay, so I agree with every word you've said there, David, except that it seems to me it's probable that if a Democrat wins the election, somehow somebody will say this isn't good for the country to send a former sitting president to jail and he'll be overlooked. I would be against that. I mean, obviously, I think nobody's above the law, but I suspect that's what's going to happen.
Look, the tradition has always been, right, that if something untoward occurred, you know, during an administration, and you might be able to ethically, technically pursue charges against someone, the tradition has always been, yeah, we're not putting the country through this. This is different. This is entirely different.
This one's from Alain. I would encourage you to consider what Alan has stated. The more we believe that President Trump is stepping in it, the more we are getting stepped on. Go, Alan. Best regards.
Say that again.
The more we believe that President Trump is stepping in it, the more we are getting stepped upon. That is from Alain.
Well, I think Alain makes a good point that I knew what I was talking about, but I have no idea what it is.
So he knew what he was talking about, but he doesn't know what he was talking about.
Alan, can you keep your dog from the computer, please?
Yeah.
All right. This one is from Bill and Kinderhook. Trump under oath. During the Judiciary Committee hearings yesterday, I noticed that Republican representatives spent an inordinate amount of time trying to discredit witnesses who had testified under oath about Trump's misdeeds. It is interesting that no one brought up the fact that neither Trump or his inner circle have offered to provide their side of the story under oath, while Trump tweets away like Robin on crack, sworn testimony.
Wow.
Bill like Kinderhook wrote this.
I tell you what, these people are on fire today.
Sworn testimony is questioned by his minions in the House, and that's from Bill.
Well, I think that was brought up. Every Democrat who spoke talked about it. But it is a point that the same Republicans who are talking about how we're not following procedure and this is a bad process don't seem to have a problem with the process of you issue a subpoena and it gets answered. That has been completely ignored. You don't hear them talking about that.
It's, well, first of all, if you were expecting that they were going to address anything substantively, well, then you should, you know, you should really question your expectations. The whole purpose of this entire proceeding, going back weeks and weeks, it's not about addressing issues on any kind of substantive level. It is to continue to speak loudly, and not really say much, but create the appearance that you're putting forth a defense. Mm. Not one person has addressed any issue on the substance. Now, you know, it seems like whoever is sitting back doing the talking points, you know, that's it's like it's the quarterback. And they break the huddle and they go out and say, it's not a crime. It's not a crime. Where's the crime? Where's the crime? Where's the crime? It's like, where's the crime? Crime, crime's right here.
Murray, get away from the computer.
This one is from Lucas. Subject heading, Trump resignation. The only way Donald Trump will resign is if Vladimir Putin asks him to. And that's Lucas in Saratoga. This one is from Amy. And Amy writes, two-party insanity. My opinion, this all seems surreal, and I'm incredibly shocked by the fact that Republicans and Democrats appear to be living in different realities. How can all Republicans claim to have genuinely listened to these testimonies and somehow all of them say stay with the party line and vote no on the articles? I can only conclude that Republicans don't sincerely desire true democracy. It's disturbing, and I'm bewildered that more Americans have not pressured their representatives to be real and defend our Constitution. Two-party system appears to have created a false binary reality in which folks blather on in echo chambers, and that's from Amy.
Yeah, this is the polarization of American politics, is that when big money gets involved, you have – the polarization hasn't been both parties moving in opposite directions. It's that the Democrats have stayed more or less where they have been since the 70s. Maybe with the Warren-Biden coalition, they're moving a little bit to the left, but it's the far right swing of the Republican Party going from, deficits matter. We need to pay attention to this. To
no principles.
You know, let's reduce tax rates for the top 10% of the population. I think that's the two different realities the author was referring to.
What has given rise to this? And we have to go back and look over the course of the last 10 to 15 years. It can be blamed on gerrymandering, okay?
Yeah.
If a person was running for office in a diverse district, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you know that primary voters tend to pay more attention, so you can either go further left or further right. During the primary, but once you get back to the general, you're always coming back to the moderate middle, right? Mm-hmm. With gerrymandering, and now that you have all of the extreme, whether it's all progressive or whether it's all conservative, you've created these districts, right, that have almost a homogenous, viewpoint. Which forces a person, if they're in a primary, they have to go further right than ever before, yep. And they're not coming back. They're staying there, right? Mm-hmm. So when they go to D.C. and you're watching these people jumping off their chairs and the insanity that you're seeing, those people are safe.
It's the haves versus the have-nots. It's the coming of a black and Hispanic majority in the United States, which has got the Republican Party so frightened.
All right, that's where we will have to leave it. And I want to thank our panel for sticking around during the vote. David Soares, Aaron Pasitti, Rosemary Armeo, and Alan Shartok, thank you all very much. Thank you all for listening to the panel today. There is much more roundtable ahead, and we invite you to stay tuned.